Let's ride.
Time for the words that are recited before each and every game here at Dodger Stadium. Take it away, Finn.
It's time for Dodger Baseball.
What's going on, Dodger fans? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Incline Dodgers podcast. We are presented by Tick Pick and Fansided. Kevin Klein speaking. Your Los Angeles Dodgers are 86-59 as they are now only 4.5 games up on the San Diego Padres and 5 games up on the Arizona Diamondbacks for first place in the NL West. We don't have a whole lot of games left, but the Dodgers do have one more with the Chicago Cubs home at Dodger Stadium as they've dropped the first two games of the series. We'll get into Yoshinobu Yamamoto and some of the other things Dodgers, but let me pass it over to my co-host Jake Reiner. What's going on, Jake? How you feeling? What's new with you?
Not much, Kevin. You know, normally I would look at a 4.5 to 5 game lead in the division over the Padres and the Diamondbacks and feel somewhat comfortable with that, given the track record of the Dodgers and the NL West and all of that stuff. But as we've known, the D-backs and the Padres have kind of been the hottest teams in baseball since the trade deadline. They don't seem to be going away, and they're tough teams to stave off because they are on fire. And so for the Dodgers to drop the first two games of this series at home to the Cubs, trying to avoid a sweep, and I'm, you know, a little worried. I'm not, you know, panicking by any means, because this Dodgers team is still really good and they've played a lot better as of late overall. So I'm not too worried, but it does make me a little nervous. And there are a couple of concerns with this team injury wise that are still giving me pause as we head to the postseason. So I'm cautiously optimistic, I would say, is my level right now.
I'm not really worried about the division anymore. I think once we took 3 of 4 against the Arizona Diamondbacks, that was enough to maintain that lead. I believe we got one more series left with the San Diego Padres. And the key to that series is pretty much at least have a lead of 4 games in the NL West, and we'll be fine, because we've got a number of matchups still left with the Colorado Rockies. I think we have two series with the Rockies, one more with the Marlins, both garbage teams. We've got the Atlanta Braves coming up next Friday through Monday. That's a 4-game series. Just I'm asking for a split in that series, but we'll kind of dive into the matchups and see where maybe the Dodgers have an advantage. But let's talk about Yoshinobu Yamamoto making his return for the Dodgers and at Dodger Stadium last night. He hadn't pitched in what felt like 3 months. I believe his last outing, he came out early, and that was when he went on the IL with what ended up being a shoulder rotator cuff issue. Sidelined him for a while, went on the 60-day, made some rehab starts, and wow, this guy looked like he hadn't been on the injured list for half the season, for what it felt like. He looked as sharp as ever. He was able to go 4 innings for the Dodgers, which was pretty huge, through 59 pitches, I believe. And what was the most impressive part was he struck out 8 Chicago Cubs. That was the part that I wanted to see, was how did the fastball look? How did the splitter look? How did the curveball look? Well, he ended up with 8 strikeouts, like I just said. His fastest pitch thrown was 98 miles per hour. Which maybe let's cool it down there, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. You're fired up to be back, but we don't need to be out there throwing 98. But what was your impressions of the return of Yamamoto?
I mean, what other impression could you have than just to be impressed by what he was able to do? I mean, we know how good he is, but to come back from the injured list and dominate a team like that over the first 4 innings against fellow countryman Imanaga, that was a great matchup to see. Not only Imanaga versus Ohtani, but Yamamoto versus Seiya Suzuki. I mean, it was really cool to watch. And even from the first batter of the game for Yamamoto to strike out Ian Happ on that just devastating breaking ball that kind of bounced before it even got to the plate. And Ian Happ was so far out in front of it that he had no shot at it, and he had already overcommitted to it. So to see him come back and dominate like this, is really, really encouraging. And it's something that I was worried about with this team, you know, kind of gearing up for October, is who is going to be available, and not just available too, because you look at Walker Buehler and Bobby Miller, and both those guys are quote unquote available, but they haven't been necessarily effective. So for Yamamoto to be not only available but dominant is such a good sign as we go into October. I just hope that he can maintain his health. And Kevin, I also saw a video. Shot in the bullpen with his curveball and working with him. It was really cool to see Kershaw just kind of giving his advice and telling the rookie how to go about throwing that curveball. And it seems like Yamamoto's curveball was the best we've ever seen it last night.
Curveball looked good. Hadn't made a start for the Dodgers since June 15th. So that is a long time. I did not realize how much time has gone by since the last time we've seen Yamamoto throw for the Dodgers. But yeah, he was sensational. I'm happy where he's at in terms of his buildup. 59 pitches. We're here. That was September 10th. So he's probably got three or four more starts left this regular season. Get that pitch up count between 80 and 90 miles, 80 to 90 pitches. And he'll be pretty much stretched out for a playoff start. So if he was able to go four effectively and efficiently against the Cubs, I'm not really worried about him going five or six innings in the postseason. So I think we're at a good spot with Yamamoto. It's just about staying healthy, like you said. And I was just impressed. Like, I looked at his Baseball Savant stats from last night. His called strikes plus whiffs generation percentage was 41%. So he was really accurate, and he was generating a lot of swings and misses. I think overall, he had 30% whiffs. So he was brilliant for the Dodgers.
Here's the thing about the Dodgers starting rotation, and it may be a blessing in disguise that these guys have gotten injured, like Glasnow and Yamamoto when they did, because it means that they're not pitching as much as they would be if they were healthy. Now, granted, Glasnow has pitched more innings than he's ever pitched in his career, so maybe this time off is really going to help him. And hopefully when he gets back, if he comes back, but let's say when he comes back, that he's going to be just as effective as he once was. And we know he is a big-time postseason pitcher. And so for these guys to not have that many miles on their arms at this point is maybe a good thing. I don't know. I just hope that they're healthy, because we know that when they're healthy, they're dominant. And to go into a playoff series with Yamamoto and Glasnow at the top of this rotation is massive. And then you add a guy like Jack Flaherty, to have those three guys healthy and dominant. I mean, I don't know what a better 1-2-3 punch there is in Major League Baseball that you could even match, or, you know, be, you know, come up with a better three than those guys.
Yeah, we talked about it on the last episode, just where Jack Flaherty's at versus the other guys. It kind of looks like he's cemented himself as the Dodgers game one starter. He's the most
certainly based on health and performance, I would agree.
Yeah, he's been a sensational pickup, and we kind of talked about he's up there with the Max Scherzers and the Rich Hills for just best deadline pickups that the Dodgers have been able to do under the Andrew Friedman era. Like, he's been better than advertised. I think his Dodgers ERA is 260. So he's been an ace, quote unquote, just the way he's pitched for the Dodgers. And so you have to feel pretty good about him going for the Dodgers in a game one if needed. But now that you add Glasnow, who looks like he's coming back soon, and Yamamoto, that's a very fortified, strong, big three.
I mean, it's kind of crazy when you think about it, Kevin, because you look at this Dodgers rotation, you know, throughout the year, they've lost Kershaw, Walker Buehler's been out and bad, Bobby Miller's been out and bad, they don't have River Ryan anymore, they don't have Gavin Stone anymore, but you add, you know, Jack Flaherty at the deadline, and then you got Landon Knack coming up in the system, and then you bring up Robletsky, who's been bad. You know, it just seems like every time the Dodgers either lose a starter or a starting pitcher comes up and pitches horrifically, there's always a backup plan, which is kind of a testament to how this organization is run pitching-wise. They just have a plethora of arms. I just hope that they're all healthy and ready to go. But the way it's lining up right now, I'm actually getting re-excited. I've been kind of down all season long when looking at this Dodgers team, because it's like, oh no, not again. We're limping into the playoffs with not a strong starting staff, but it seems like these guys are coming back together at just the right time. I was worried that there were too many things that had to go right for this team in order to gear up for October, but it looks like I'm wrong, and I'm happy that I am.
Smash that like button while you're here. Let's get more people in the chat to show up and get involved. But more thoughts on who that fourth starter would be for the Dodgers in a few minutes. But I want to talk about the rest of this game, because as great as Yamamoto looked, the Dodgers ended up losing this game, and they played some pretty shitty baseball. The goods were Tommy Edman hit his first Dodgers home run, ended up with two home runs in the game off Imanaga, and he's looked like an excellent deadline pickup, batting average of .293, switch hitter, which is very hard to come by these days, a guy that can hit both left-handed and right-handed pitching. And not only that, he plays a really good defensive center field other than that throwing error, and he can play shortstop and second base. So he's the new versatile player that makes up for kind of the lack of production that Chris Taylor and maybe Kike Hernandez have provided at times for the Dodgers. So love Edman. And then Max Muncy hit a home run, and I know you wanted to talk about Max Muncy in a little bit right now, but Max Muncy took the lefty Imanaga deep as well.
Yes. And that's just my point, is that if you crunch the numbers, right, and you look at, you know, historically what Max Muncy has done against left-handed pitching, it's not pretty. But you look at the body of work that he's provided as a Dodger, and I'm specifically talking about the late game heroics and the clutch stats, there should be no world in which you're platooning Max Muncy with anybody else. I don't care how great of an average Kike Hernandez has. Now, the Dodgers did take 3 out of 4 from the Diamondbacks, and there was a game in there where Dave Roberts pinch hit Max Muncy, who is already 2 for 2 in that game with Kike Hernandez, with the bases loaded and one out, I believe the situation was. And you're telling me that you'd rather have Kike Hernandez at the plate than Max Muncy in that situation? I get that Kike Hernandez has been clutch in the past, and he's good against left-handed pitching, but to me, Max Muncy is a player that you just don't pinch hit for ever. He is, in my opinion, in the tier of Otani, Betts, Freeman, Smith, Teoscar Hernandez. You're not pinch hitting for those guys under any circumstances. I believe Max Muncy deserves that same respect because of the clutch stats, and also because he can hit left-handed pitching. It may not be at the clip that he hits right-handed pitching, but his last two home runs are off lefties. He's a Major League Baseball player and a really good one. He can hit left-handed pitching. There should be no world where pinch hitting or platooning Max Muncy. And it just, we almost lost that game. Thank God the Dodgers were able to come back. And thank God Tommy Edman, again, as you mentioned, has been great. And he was clutch in that game in Arizona. So the Dodgers ended up winning that game. But boy, oh boy, that would have been a hard pill to swallow had the Dodgers lost that game. And what did Kike Hernandez do in that situation? He struck out on 3 pitches. You would rather have a guy coming cold off the bench in that situation than a guy who's already 2 for 2 and one of your best hitters and best power hitters and biggest run producers on this team. I just don't understand that logic.
How quickly does Dave Roberts forget that Max Muncy at times was one of the Dodgers' better hitters against left-handed pitching? I mean, he took Madison Bumgarner deep multiple times throughout his career. And come postseason, I don't think that the Dodgers should, if it were to be a left-handed pitcher to start, I don't think Max Muncy should be on the bench. Excuse me.
He shouldn't be on the bench under any circumstances. If he's healthy, he needs to be in the lineup. And he should not be taken out of the lineup under any circumstances.
Yeah, he's also just been better, I feel like, with his plate discipline overall. He's been able to get some walks and work the count. So even if he's not, per se, hitting lefties as well, he's still able to work deep, deep counts and set the table, pass the baton for the next guy up. And I just feel like a guy like Max Muncy has too much of a proven track record and has a lot of playoff success that would be kind of foolish to have him on the bench at any point in a baseball game.
Yeah.
So I'm right there
and
with
again,
you.
Like I feel like there are some players in this lineup. Like if you were to start Kevin Kiermaier against a right-handed pitcher, of course you want to pinch hit Kike Hernandez against the lefty. If they bring one in against Kiermaier, obviously that's the move, but I believe Max Muncy deserves the treatment that Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, Smith, and Hernandez and Teoscar Hernandez get, which is they're in the lineup the entire game, unless something unforeseen happens like an injury. But they're going to be in the lineup no matter what.
Yeah, so for the first half of this game, it was awesome. Dodgers were hitting home runs. Edmund, Muncy, Yamamoto struck out the side, I believe, twice against the Cubs, and he was dealing. Then we get to the bullpen. And it really falls apart. I believe in the eighth inning, Evan Phillips comes into the game. He gives up some hits. He doesn't really have the sharpest command, but the Dodgers defense as a whole was just awful in that inning. They had three errors. Austin Barnes had an error that he should have came through with. Kike Hernandez seemed to have flashbacks of the last time he made contact with Cody Bellinger, when he ripped his shoulder apart unintentionally and ended Bellinger's Dodgers successful career. And so he had an error. Tommy Edman had a throwing error. And so the Dodgers just unraveled. They ended up giving up five runs. I think they were up 3-1 and ended up trailing 6-3 by the time the inning was over. And I'm not going to put really much of it on Evan Phillips, but this was another inning where once again, Evan Phillips was a little shaky, but the Dodgers defense was the culprit here. They were just bad.
Yeah. I think, other than that Nico Hoerner double, which was a pretty hard hit ball, the rest of the balls in that inning were pretty soft, was a lot of soft contact. I mean, what the hell was that throw from Austin Barnes? It looked like he wasn't even trying to fire it down there. We know Austin Barnes doesn't have the best arm or a good arm at all. But to me, in that situation, you've got to make at least a strong throw to first base. It wasn't even close. I didn't understand what was going on there. And then Kike Hernandez tried to make a do or die play by fielding the ball and trying to tag out the runner Bellinger in between first and second, and he missed everything. And then there was also a weird play in the outfield where Tommy Edman threw the ball away, and Miguel Rojas, I guess, didn't know the trajectory of where the ball was going, so he kind of let it go as if to kind of maybe let the ball go to third base, but that ball was not even going close to third base. And then the ball gets out of play and runs score. So I don't blame Evan Phillips here, because he got the soft contact that he was looking for, and he should have not coughed up the lead the way that they did.
Here I am trying to look up Austin Barnes' stats, thinking that he's been crappy at the plate.
I did the same thing. He actually apparently been hitting well.
Yeah, so I was about to make the argument, like, why not have Dalton Rushing up on the team and serve as the backup catcher come postseason? Because it's not like Austin Barnes is probably going to start in the NLDS anyways. But when I see Austin Barnes batting .368 over his last seven games with three RBIs, I'm like, well, that's not going to fly with Dave Roberts, because he loves his veterans and he loves his guys. So discount that. Barnes ain't going anywhere, unfortunately. I do kind of want to get your opinion, though. Andy Páez or Chris Taylor, neither of them have been playing that impressive. Is this even a race right now, or do we just have the impressions that they're going to give it to Chris Taylor?
I think it's pretty clear that when they DFA'd Jason Hayward and basically chose Chris Taylor over him, that I would say you're probably right that they would lean towards adding the veteran player to the playoff roster, given Chris Taylor's track record in the postseason and kind of the, you know, feel for the dramatics. But man, it has been a tough watch for CT3 this year. There were a couple moments in the game where Teoscar Hernandez got injured. They brought in CT3, and there was a big spot late in the game where you needed Chris Taylor to put the ball in play, and he struck out, I think. And you kind of wonder, why not Andy Páez? Now, granted, Andy Páez makes a plethora of mistakes out there, mainly defensively. The other night, it was a base running error where it was just a lazy pickoff attempt that he got out on last night. So it's a tough sell when you're comparing the two. But if it were up to me, I would go Andy Pajas. Just the way he's been hitting, the power that he possesses, and he's been hitting the ball a little bit better lately. I just think that, you know, you're kind of like holding your nose here, making this pick. But yeah, I would go with Pajas, but I fear that, you know, like you mentioned about Austin Barnes, and, you know, Dave Roberts loves his vets, and, you know, CT3 is a proven postseason player, so they'll probably go with him.
Asking from Craig Osterberg, do you think Teoscar Hernandez is back tonight?
Wasn't he supposed to already be back?
He was supposed to be back Monday or Tuesday, but like in Dodgers fashion, they're always late. But I will say he was in the on-deck circle last night. He was going to bat, but until Muncy got robbed by, oh my God, the vanilla cupcake that is also Willie Mays, apparently, in center field, Pete Crow Armstrong, who you hit anything in his direction and this guy catches it. I mean, he is literally the cracker vanilla version of Willie Mays out there. He's insane.
He's very athletic. You know, there was a play last night where there's a fly ball hit the right center field and he didn't look like he had a bead on it. And then the last second, like, caught it, like, kind of below his waist in between his legs. And it was just like, I mean, shit, if he was making those catches, you're screwed. I mean, you talk about Max Muncy getting robbed the last at bat. It almost looked like he was going to rob Tommy Edman's second home run last night. I mean, he was not that far off from catching that ball either. And then he also robbed Kike Hernandez. That, you know, saved a run for them. That would have been a huge boost insurance wise for the Dodgers. So yeah, he completely owned us in the outfield last night and in this series, not to mention the jobs that Bellinger and Michael Bush have done too.
Feels like center fielders, for whatever reason, always have their best performances against the Dodgers. I don't know if he was playing center field that night, but the night Mike Tauchman robbed Albert Pujols of the home run.
He was in left, but yeah.
That would have been the difference in the division. And then Brandon Doyle always seems to come up with amazing catches against the Dodgers when we play the Rockies. And now you've got Pete Crow Armstrong, who I wanted to pull up his Savant page to see, is this guy for real or was he just having a lucky night? But no, he is apparently one of the fastest players in the league. So that's why he's able to cover so much ground. He has a sprint speed of 99 out of 100 in the percentiles. And then his outs above average, he's a plus 11. So he might be a gold glover this season.
Yeah, and he has to be pretty good to move Bellinger to right field. I mean, we know how good Bellinger is as a center fielder. So that's a defensively really good outfield they have there in Chicago.
Yeah. So all you can do is tip your cap to Pete Crow Armstrong. The guy was a pest, and we get probably one more night of him. So we'll see if he makes any more amazing catches. But, I mean, that pretty much covers this game. It was the Pete Crow Armstrong defensive show, the return of Yamamoto, and the Dodgers having one of their off nights where they just looked lost defensively. But I want to get into the first game of this series now, where Walker Buehler started for the Dodgers. And he looked bad. He gave up 5 runs, 9 hits, and he got completely owned by Michael Bush and Cody Bellinger. Both of them homered off him.
Yeah, it's been a rough ride for Walker Buehler this year. It's been very frustrating. I mean, he's just getting hit so hard that you're kind of looking at him and you're like, we can't have this in the playoffs. We just can't. Like, you just and it's such a weird concept too, to have a healthy Walker Buehler and say we don't want him pitching for us in the postseason. I mean, that's a crazy thing to think and to say and to experience, because this guy, as we know, at one point was all world in the playoffs, and ever since 2021 it's been a real rough ride with him, not only being out, but then being back and pitching pretty badly. So yeah, he's just getting teed off on right now. And with the way that that game one went last season with Kershaw giving up just a million runs, the Dodgers could not recover from that, not only in that game, obviously, but in that series. So if we're using that as kind of a benchmark, you just can't afford to have that happen in a short series. You can't afford your starting pitcher just get absolutely shelled and expect to recover from that, because these games are too precious. So for me, him making this sort of audition tape for himself going into the playoffs, he's got to do something pretty spectacular over these next couple weeks. Otherwise, I don't know how you even roster him at this point.
I can't believe I'm saying this in the year 2024, but I'm completely out on Walker Buehler, Clayton Kershaw, and Bobby Miller, all for making postseason appearances.
I agree. I'm with you.
They've all been just disappointing for a variety of reasons. But since we're talking about Walker Buehler, I mean, I understand the struggles because he's coming off a second Tommy John. I wasn't expecting him to be the Walker Buehler pre the second surgery. But even besides that, he's been worse than I expected. I thought, okay, I'll be happy with a high 3, low 4 ERA. He can't even be that for us. He has no nasty spin or real true command of his four-seam fastball. Even when the velocity is there at times, it still gets hit hard. Opponents are hitting well above 350 against his four-seam fastball. This other secondary pitches, for the most part, have been junk too. His curveball has been crappy. The changeup has been horrendous. Opponents are hitting 500 against his changeup, probably because it looks like the same fastball the way it's coming out of his hand. So the only pitch that's worked for him is his slider, but he doesn't really throw that a lot in his pitch mix, only about 7.5% of the time. Everything else that's coming out of Walker Buehler's pitch mix, for the most part, has been getting hit hard. He's getting lit up. And honestly, he's just been pretty crappy for the most part. ERA is basically 6. His FIP is 6. Expected ERA is over 5. He can't strike anyone out. His chase rate is very low as well. He's walking a lot of batters. There's really nothing positive I can say about Walker Buehler this season.
No. I mean, really no. He's had 2 fairly decent starts, pretty much, all season, and the rest have been bad. And he's not only giving up runs, but they're hitting home runs off of him, you know, and walks, and he's been walking a lot of guys. So you're looking at crooked numbers in the playoffs. That scares me. And same with Bobby Miller. He got shelled by the Angels last time out. And I mean, to me, like, look at we're what, you know, almost mid September right now.
Yeah.
Bobby Miller, I feel like this is his last shot right now. I mean, to do anything that would convince the Dodgers to allow him to be in the playoffs. But I mean, if you have a healthy Yamamoto, a healthy Glasnow, you've got Jack Flaherty and Landon Knack, I would take those guys every single day over Walker Buehler, Clayton Kershaw, and Bobby Miller. I just don't think it's particularly close right now, saying that all those guys are healthy.
Yeah, I mean, you just mentioned him. I think Landon Knack, based off just who's left, he might have to be the game four starter. The last thing I want to add with Walker Buehler is the last full good season from Buehler, he threw 208 innings for the Dodgers, gave up 19 home runs. This season, he's thrown 59 innings for the Dodgers. He's allowed 15 home runs. So the home run clip has just been bad. And you mentioned earlier that Kershaw is coming back. At least he's trying. He's been throwing bullpen sessions again. Skechers made him, I think, specialized shoes so that he can come down on that toe since it's been aggravating him with the Spurs. And so Kershaw's trying to come back. But another guy who he just looked bad in his last 2 outings. The Rays start wasn't impressive at all. And then he was going to get hit hard regardless in that Arizona Diamondbacks game. I think almost him coming out kind of spared him for what was set up to be a complete shell shit fest. Because whether it was the injury or not, I don't think Kershaw was going to do well in that game. And I think we almost got lucky that he had to come out so that the bullpen save the day. Unfortunately, the Dodgers, actually the bullpen didn't really save the day overall, but fortunately the Dodgers offense posted 10 runs that night. So that made up for the 9 runs that ended up being allowed.
And also fortunately, I believe that was the Merrill Kelly game and the Dodgers own him.
No, I think it was Gallen.
Oh, was it?
I'm pretty sure Gallen came out
early. One of these games we should.
Merrill Kelly was the second game where we jumped off to a 3-0 lead with the Mookie.
That was the Gavin Stone game. Yeah.
Yep.
You're right.
But yeah, so Kershaw's another one. I don't feel good about him starting a postseason game for the Dodgers. And after Bobby Miller's horrible outing against the Angels, I don't care if he throws a no-hitter tonight against the Cubs. I don't think that's enough for me to win me over for him starting a postseason game. He's been too sporadic as well. He's the most volatile of anybody, even more than any of our relievers. You don't know what you're going to get from Bobby Miller every time out.
Right. And he, I don't want to say he lacks the temperament, but he does let his emotions get to him a little bit on the mound. And if he's going bad, he doesn't really have the tools yet to kind of course correct in the moment. And especially if he's pitching poorly and he's not commanding his pitches, which he's had a lot of command issues this year. I agree. But again, it's like, you know, the Dodgers pitching staff at a moment's notice could implode with injuries. So it's very important that Bobby Miller is as good as he can be each time he gets the ball. Same with Walker Buehler, because if those guys are your only healthy guys, we might not have a choice unless you want to try and do a bullpen game for one of these playoff games, which would be just, I hate that, but you know, you might not have a choice.
I don't know if we were facing Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle, or if that was Michael Bush and Cody Bellinger, but it might as well have been Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle, because I don't know what it is about, especially Michael Bush facing the Dodgers, but he's gone off against us in both series now. He went 4-for-5 in that game, had a home run, drove in 3 RBIs, and I feel like Cody Bellinger, every time he faces us now, has a great series. He had a home run and 3 RBIs. They seem like guys that we should be able to contain, and yet, like every former Dodger, whether it's them, Corey Seager, Keibert Ruiz, Justin Turner, they have their times against us.
And again, you know, Michael Bush, I couldn't tell you what his personality is like because he doesn't really show it. Bellinger a little bit more, but still kind of a reserved guy on the field, at least. I don't know whether they have chips on their shoulders, but both Bush and Bellinger are kind of cast-offs for the Dodgers. The Dodgers kind of gave up on them at a certain point. And so they may be fueled by that, it seems. Getting a chance to show the Dodgers that you should have kept us. And especially for Michael Bush, who for years was just blocked from playing anywhere because he's not a great defender. And the Dodgers were basically blocked at the corners with Muncy and Freeman. There was really no place to put Michael Bush. I bet that if he does have that kind of mentality, that would kind of give us an explanation as to why these guys are playing so well. But I mean, good for them, honestly, because they're kicking our ass.
We'll see what they do tonight. They do have an easier opponent with Bobby Miller, so I'm expecting some more runs from them.
And who's pitching for the Cubs?
I think his name's Jordan Wicks.
Oh yeah, the former Cardinals guy.
Yeah, so another lefty. I think Mookie Betts will have a big game. We'll get to your guys' questions in just a couple of minutes. So start dropping down those questions, and I see some as well. So we'll definitely tackle those. But I do want to get some injury updates in there. First of all, talked about Brustar Graterol being back. So that's obviously a great sight to see. Yamamoto came back. Tyler Glasnow had a very successful bullpen session and is going to throw a simulated game in Atlanta, I believe is what I heard. And he should be back in the Dodgers rotation very shortly if all lines up well, to be determined on Kershaw. We're getting some questions about Gavin Stone, like from Carlos Gomez. Don't think we've got any updates on Gavin Stone because I'm pretty sure they shut him down from throwing for at least 10 days, and then they'll reevaluate to see where he's at. But I don't really expect Gavin Stone to throw again during the regular season. But hopefully I'm wrong there and he comes back. New guys did end up on the IL, though. First off, Anthony Bonda. What the hell, man? What? Every year there's some asshole out there that punches a wall, loses their temper. I feel like there was even someone that punched the wall when they won the division. I'd have to Google that, but I'm pretty sure that happened like a year or two ago.
Wasn't that Devin Williams?
It might have been. I know he definitely punched the wall. I got to look up to see if that was what caused it. But yeah, and this year, this is like the third year out of 4 years now where the Dodgers have someone that's somewhat instrumental in their pitching staff, and we lose them for probably the season. Urias was for much worse reasons off the field, but we lost him. And now it looks like we're going to lose Anthony Bonda for probably the rest of the season because he had to punch a solid object, which was no surprise to me when the minute I heard that was why he was going on the IL, when he broke his hand, I was like, fucking idiot, probably punched something. And then the media was able to confirm it after the game. But yeah, he punched his throwing hand. So broken hands, fractured hands, those are usually 6 weeks minimum recovery timelines. So he's probably done, and I'm pissed off. Like, they could DFA him for this bullshit, and honestly, I wouldn't be upset.
It's just so frustrating. I'll admit something to you, Kevin, and everyone else out there. Like, I do struggle with anger issues playing sports. Like, I can get pretty hot whenever I'm playing tennis or softball or whatever. I used to play baseball in high school and stuff like that. Like, whenever I play a sport and I don't do well, like, I do get furious at myself and might throw equipment or whatever or break something. But again, you know, the difference between me, Anthony Bonda, is that he's a Major League Baseball player getting paid a lot of money, and I'm a struggling actor. So that's the big difference. And nobody's counting on me to be a guy that is going to lead a team to a World Series or be a part of a World Series contending team. Anthony Bonda is that guy. And especially for him, where they kind of brought him on and you kind of thought, oh, well, what are we going to get from him? And he's been a remarkable, surprising addition to this team. After the Dodgers, you know, they gave up on Victor Gonzalez. They gave up on Caleb Ferguson. They got rid of Ryan Yarbrough, all these lefties, because they could rely on guys like Vesia, who's been spectacular, and Bonda, who's been very effective, not as good, but pretty effective as another lefty out of the bullpen. For him to have a bad outing out there, which it happens to all relievers, and then basically to ruin the rest of his season, because who knows if he's going to come back from a broken hand. I mean, you know, everybody's different, but like at this stage of the season, to break something, you're not coming back from that. And even if he does come back from that, what are you going to get from someone like that on his pitching hand, no less? It's just kind of, it seems immature, it seems irresponsible, and also you're kind of letting your teammates down too. That sucks, especially your fellow bullpen mates, you know, guys that have been there for a long time, like Trinan and Brazier and Phillips and Brusdar Graterol came back. I mean, you got Daniel Hudson. I mean, you got a very veteran core of relievers there that are counting on young guys like Anthony Bonda to come through. And for him to do that the way he did it, it's just so disappointing and frustrating.
Yeah. So because of this injury, now it sets us up to have someone else who's been worse, potentially, like Joe Kelly. All of a sudden, his name probably comes up and could be on the Dodgers postseason bullpen roster mix. But I'm not the first to say this, and I'm certainly not the last. This opens the door, and I think the Dodgers got to pull the trigger. You probably have all heard the name by now, the flamethrower down in AAA who's worked his way up through the system rapidly, Edgardo Henriquez. The 22-year-old who can throw 104 mile per hour gas. He's made 11 appearances now in AAA Oklahoma City for the Dodgers. And the guy has a 169 ERA, 16 strikeouts over 11 innings thrown. I would just roll the dice, take a flyer on this guy and bet on the talent and add him to the Dodgers 40-man roster and just gamble. I think there's just a lot of upside with guys like him. And I mean, we've seen a lot from Joe Kelly and other awful players like Nick Ramirez, who's maybe the worst reliever I've seen for the Dodgers in years. I thought Johan Ramirez was worse. I'll gladly take him over Nick Ramirez, because every time Nick Ramirez goes out there, I feel like the guy just came from the buffet line and he's ready to serve some meatballs. He's been dog shit.
Yeah, he's ready to serve them or eat them. So yeah, no, he's been bad. I would be down to take a flyer on that guy too. It's just the track record of the Dodgers doing something like that. It doesn't really exist. They haven't really done that with unproven relievers before. Just kind of, you know, fast track them to the playoffs or to the playoff roster. You know, without really seeing what they have first for, you know, a considerable amount of the season. So we'll see about that. Here's a crazy thought. What about adding a guy like Rich Hill for the rest of the season to spot start, maybe come out of the bullpen as a guy that could help you? I mean, why not? Why not add him to the roster and see what you got? I mean, at this point, it's like the Dodgers need arms to finish the rest of the season. They need to cover innings. You're not guaranteeing that Rich Hill is going to be on your playoff roster.
I don't think he's eligible.
What?
I don't think he'd be eligible.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe that's perfect. But I'm just saying that, you know, you need a guy to eat innings, and that's a definite candidate to do that.
I don't know if he stretched out, to be honest. I thought he was going to start for the Red Sox, and then I looked up his game logs the other day and I have him up again. He was only going one inning, basically. The most pitches he threw in one outing was 25. So I don't even think he'd be that serviceable for the Dodgers, because I don't know how stretched out he is. But I do have an alternative solution. If you don't know, Jake feels a certain way about this pitcher, and he has fast-tracked himself quicker than I expected. And he just pitched yesterday for the Oklahoma City Dodgers, and he's been an all-star before. Tony Gonsolin. Tony Gonsolin threw two innings, had three strikeouts, and I don't expect him to be anywhere near the all-star version of Tony Gonsolin. I think the Dodgers themselves even said that if he were to come back this season, he'd be a reliever, which thank goodness they actually have the intelligence to think this way, because they made that drastic mistake with Dustin May a couple years ago where they kind of almost rushed him back from Tommy John surgery and tried to make him a starter, and he was all over the place and effectively ended his season. Why not see what you've got with Tony Gonsolin, give him a couple more outings in Oklahoma City, and audition him for that last spot in the Dodgers bullpen, because they definitely need one or two length guys.
I'm not a huge Tony Gonsolin fan, as you know, but at this point, fuck it. Like, we need arms. We need healthy arms in this bullpen and in this rotation. And whether you make Gonsolin an opener where he pitches the first two or three innings of a game, or you make him the bulk guy where he comes in after an opener and pitches three to four in the middle innings, or comes out of the pen and pitches one inning, you see what you got with him. If he's healthy and ready to go, why not? I mean, I'm willing to take a flyer on Rich Hill. I'm willing to see what Tony Gonsolin has in store. I'm willing to take a flyer on the guy you mentioned in AAA. I'm fine with all of that stuff. What I'm not fine with is banking on a guy like Joe Kelly to come back, because I've just about had it with Joe Kelly. I've never really felt comfortable with him at any point, really, as a Dodger. Whether he's healthy or on the mound, it just seems like it's so unpredictable and a recipe for disaster.
Your Joe Kelly is my Michael Grove. I hope Michael Grove's nowhere near the postseason roster. He's just been awful as well since coming back.
He's always been bad. I mean, he's had stretches of being good, but overall, bad.
Yeah, so those are both two guys that I don't trust. So yeah, take a flyer on someone else that we've mentioned. Drop your questions below. Getting to the final quarter of the show. So let's get your questions in there. Hit that like button if you haven't yet. And there's not that many games left for the Dodgers this regular season. So if you're trying to go to Dodger Stadium, impress a friend, impress a loved one, take a family member, maybe you want to go on a road trip, download the TickPick app. No service fees at checkout. And I've been scouting the prices out there on the market. They're, for the most part, cheaper on many given nights than like the SeatGeeks, the Ticketmasters, the StubHubs of the world. If you're trying to go to a concert tonight, maybe you're all about that Linkin Park reunion, download the TickPick app and go check out Linkin Park with their new singer. I have more thoughts on that, but you'd have to ask me on Twitter. Javier T, do you guys see Landon Knack on the postseason roster?
I mean, at this point, he's one of the four not healthy, but because Glasnow is not back yet. But let's say for the sake of argument, Glasnow is back. He is one of the four healthy slash effective starting pitchers that we have. So I don't see why you wouldn't add him to the postseason roster, given what Buehler, Miller, and Kershaw have done so far.
Landon Knack is a bona fide pitcher. Continue to let him start every time out. And if he just continues to come through, Landon Knack should definitely be on the Dodgers postseason roster. Justin Yamas, lovely Discord member, loyal guy. You can always count on him to ask great questions. Jack Flaherty and Teoscar Hernandez, do we re-sign either of them?
It's going to be tough because Teoscar's going to demand a pretty hefty contract, and Jack Flaherty has pitched himself into a very, very formidable contract with the way he's been going. So it's going to be tough to sign either of them, let alone both. But I feel like they do need to retain at least one of them, because why not? I mean, the Dodgers have struggled to, especially with starting pitching, the Dodgers have struggled to find guys that are good and healthy. And Flaherty has been that this year. Who knows if he's going to continue to be healthy? We know he struggled, you know, after coming up with the Cardinals and being effective as he was. We know he struggled with injury and coming back from that. So you kind of take that with what you will. And Teoscar Hernandez has had a resurgent year this year. Can he continue to do that year in and year out? I mean, those are questions that the Dodgers need to answer before they pony up this money. But certainly with what they've done for this team, I would love to keep both of them, but definitely at least one of them.
I'd be shocked if the Dodgers don't re-sign Teoscar Hernandez. I mean, the guy gave a press conference the other day to announce that he's not having a season-ending injury, for crying out loud. Like, this guy has embraced being a Dodger. I think he wants to come back. I think that the Dodgers are willing to offer him his market value deal. I'm calling it almost a near lock that they bring back Teoscar. Flaherty, on the other hand, I think he's purely a rental. I think he's earned a big contract. I don't think the Dodgers want to allocate their funds to it. I think they're going to focus more on signing a left-handed starter in the offseason because our lefties are very thin, both in the bullpen and the starting rotation. So I think they pivot and make that move there. Next up from Maria G, what are the chances we make Kopech a serious offer? I'll say that Michael Kopech is not an upcoming free agent. He's got at least one more year of control. And so I don't think the Dodgers have to even make any serious thoughts about this right now. I don't know if Michael Kopech wants to eventually become a starter again, because that is naturally what he is. Or because he is a Boris client, maybe they feel that they can chase the most money with him being a reliever. I do think the Dodgers will make him an offer when he does become a free agent. I don't know how all in they are on him yet, because they still have another year to decide.
Agreed.
Okay, we got another question from Javier T. Hate to ask the question, but the four starters for the postseason would be Glasnow, Yamamoto, and then he added Jack Flaherty below, Landon Knack, Walker, and Miller. Yeah, I mean, we've already covered all this. Those are definitely the guys in consideration. Throw in Kershaw. I don't think we're missing anyone else. Ivy, like you guys mentioned, with only about 2 weeks left of the regular season, what are your overall thoughts about how the regular season went, and was it what you were expecting since spring training? Pretty good question.
That is a good question. Yes, it was what I was expecting out of spring training in terms of where this team is. I mean, they are battling with the Phillies for the best record in the National League. I mean, that seems like we could have predicted that because of the way that this team was stacked. What I did not expect was just the ravaging of injuries and the amount of Tommy John surgeries this team has racked up just this year of guys going down and needing that surgery has been just mind blowing. And a lot of the pitching performances of Walker Buehler and Bobby Miller, I thought, especially Bobby Miller, I thought, you know, Walker Buehler, you didn't really know what you were going to get because he was coming back from TJ, the second one in his career. But with Bobby Miller, I was like, after what he did his rookie year, I was like, I was excited for sophomore year Bobby Miller. I mean, the way he looked out of the gate too, I was like, here we go. This is what we wanted. This is what we expected. You know, I just think that it's been a very disappointing year starting pitching wise. The bullpen has been amazing. Otani has been good, if not better than advertised. I don't even know why we're having a conversation about MVP. It seems like, in my opinion, it's a lock for Shohei Otani, and nobody, including Francisco Lindor and Chris Sale, should even be in the conversation if you stack up their respective seasons. So I think my expectations have been met in terms of how well this team has done in the regular season. But again, the big worry that I have is, will this starting staff be ready for October health-wise and effective-wise? And B, will this offense be able to score runs without hitting home runs? Will they be able to manufacture runs when they need to, push runs across, scratch and claw, and not just wait for the home run? Or will they just be hitting home runs left and right? Because we know if they do that, they're going to be winning these ball games.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that so far the season has definitely met my expectations. I'm actually really happy with the starting staff overall. It's miles ahead better than last season, despite just being snake bitten by injuries left and right. I mean, Gavin Stone was awesome. Tyler Glasnow has definitely met what I was expecting. I didn't expect him to throw 200 innings. At this point, I'm happy with where they're at with him. Just be healthy for the postseason. Yamamoto, kind of a blessing in disguise that he didn't have to throw 200 innings either. So hopefully he's fresh for October. Flaherty was an awesome pickup. Bullpen has been kind of volatile at times. There were instances where I was frustrated that we were relying on guys like Johan Ramirez and Nick Ramirez and letting other guys get saves that had no business being out there. So I think the bullpen took a minor step back, but it's been solid overall with the addition of Michael Kopech. And then offensively, yeah, it sucked when Mookie went down, but he would be the MVP right now if he didn't get injured. I think that's a pretty sensible take, that if Mookie Betts had played a full 162 for the Dodgers, it'd be him or Shohei for the National League MVP, and I think it would be Mookie Betts, to be honest, because he's having one of his best seasons ever, and it kind of went under the radar because he missed a significant amount of time, and Shohei has just been the superstar that he's been with the home runs and solo bases. But Mookie Betts has been an awesome number two, if you want to call him that.
Yeah, and also to pick up where he left off after he got hit in the hand to basically the MVP level that we saw when he went down with the injury is nothing short of remarkable. I've been loving what I'm seeing from Mookie Betts, not only the fact that they were smart enough to put him back in the outfield, thank God, because that is where he belongs, but also the other stuff, the hitting with runners in scoring position has been massive. The guy is hitting out of his way, 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 way over 350 with runners in scoring position, has been elite in pretty much every aspect of the game. He's also stealing bases and running the bases a lot better than he normally does. So you can't say enough about Mookie Betts. Also just his willingness to play shortstop and to move around the diamond the way he has for this team should show you a lot about who he is.
Yeah, so I'll give people a chance if you haven't asked a question yet in the chat, but for now, that's probably it on the questions. I want to just cover real quickly this upcoming series. So, wow, I did not realize that the Dodgers are now second in the National League. They fell behind the Phillies because of this recent slide to the Cubs. The Dodgers are facing the Atlanta Braves starting Friday. They're going to Atlanta. Right now, the Braves and New York Mets are deadlocked, tied for that last wild card spot. So the Dodgers have a real opportunity to knock the Braves out of the postseason altogether. And I mean, it won't be easy. We've got Landon Knack in line to start against Schwellenbach, who's been a good rookie for the Braves. The game two will be the marquee matchup. Jack Flaherty against Chris Sale, probably the NL Cy Young front runner. And then I don't know if Walker Buehler will make that start or they'll push him back a day, but I've seen Walker Buehler against Charlie Morton in game three, and then game four is to be determined. But kind of any predictions, expectations, what you hope to see in this series?
Just based on the pitching matchups, the Dodgers, I'd be confident in saying that they'll win two out of three, probably game one and game three, depending on who pitches in that game three, because the Dodgers typically hit Charlie Morton well. They've seen him a lot over the course of his career, especially kind of the second half of his career. They've seen him a lot. So, and they've done pretty well against him. Schwellenbach is a really good rookie for them. So he could dominate this Dodgers lineup, but I feel confident with Knack on the mound and the Dodgers' ability to score runs that I feel confident in that game one. The game two is going to be an interesting one. I feel like Jack Flaherty is going to keep the Dodgers in the ball game, but it's just a matter of if the Dodgers can beat Chris Sale. And Chris Sale has had a very resurgent year. And like you said, a front runner for the Cy Young. So that's going to be a tough game to win.
Yeah, so this is...
I'm staying corrected. It's a four-game series?
Yeah, it's four.
Okay, well then, so do we know the matchup for the fourth game?
I don't think the Dodgers haven't lined up or even know who their starter would be. For the Braves, it might be Max Fried, but also I think he's pitching today, so to be determined.
I'd be happy with a split. You know, I think given the matchups and the fact that we're on the road, a four-game series, a split. But three out of four, obviously, is the goal.
Yeah, we got a split at a bare minimum. We haven't locked up the division yet, so a four-game sweep would be absolutely devastating for us to face. So we got to win some of these games and just continue to play good baseball and have that NOS locked up by the time we face the Padres. But, yeah, I think this is a good showcase for Jack Flaherty, not only for the Dodgers, but his upcoming free agency. If he can throw a masterclass against the Braves, that'll be a really big booster. Landon Knack, if he's dialed in and dazzles, then it makes us feel more confident about him starting a postseason game for the Dodgers. And if Walker Buehler is pitching in this series and gets lit up, then I think you got to pull the plug and maybe cut his season short. So a lot riding on Walker Buehler in this series. Freddie Freeman, obviously making his return to Atlanta once again. Hopefully he goes off. He's been quiet in this Cubs series, but I feel like Freddie Freeman is going to get fired up to be in Atlanta. I think this is going to be just a big, big booster for a guy like him.
Yeah, I agree. It's a big series. And fortunately, in the most recent past, the Dodgers have done well against good teams. I mean, they took 2 of 3 from Cleveland. They took 3 out of 4 from the D-backs. So this is another test of a good team. And I think the Dodgers are ready and they're healthy enough to win this series. If not, you know, at the very least split it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's all I got today. Jake, is there anything else you wanted to cover? Any final segments, topics, questions you want to throw out there?
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in to the Incline Dodgers podcast today. If you haven't hit that subscribe button yet and you're listening on the audio feed, please hit that subscribe button. And if you're watching the YouTube channel and you are watching after the fact, after we went live, because once we go live, these videos are out there forever. So if you want to revisit this in 3 years and make fun of some of our takes, that's out there, unfiltered. So you can see what aged well, what didn't age well. But anyways, where I'm going with this is leave a comment, drop a comment below. Share your thoughts. What do you think the Dodgers are going to do against the Atlanta Braves? And who would be your game four starter if you had to choose? Landon Knack, Clayton Kershaw, Walker Buehler, Bobby Miller, someone else? Let us know. We're going to peace out now. Thank you guys for listening. Go Dodgers.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.